Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Run From Zero. Today's discussion centers around Pastor David's sermon in week three of our Well Done series. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, pause this episode, go check it out, and then come back whenever you're done with that. We talk a lot about margin in our lives and creating margin in our lives in this episode. And I want you to start asking yourself the question, where am I creating room to intentionally connect with God in my life? Let's dive in. Well, good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
It sounded like a good. Yeah.
Good.
Doing well.
It's good.
So we've had some odd weather recently. It's been like 90 recently. And I think by the time that people are going to listen to this, it will probably have snowed. Yep. And so that's South Dakota for you, for sure. I remember recently there was a forecast. It was 71 and sunny with a chance of snow. It's just, and we got snow too. We got like 2 inches of snow that day. So we're just kind of going through it right now, but it got me thinking, we're getting almost to May here. What is the thing that like lets you know that it's summer? What is that sign that just trips your brain into like, oh, it's summer mode?
It's got to be after Memorial Day. I mean, I know, what is the technical date? June 20?
It's later than you'd think. Okay, All the seasonal dates are always later.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, I don't even consider it a possibility until, because I mean, I know some Memorial Days where I can see my breath. Like I'm outside. It's like, this is, I grew up in the Midwest where Memorial Day was actually warm. You're always grilling out. The golf clubs have been out for about a month and a half or two. Here it's like, it's cold, rainy. And so I would say for me, Father's Day.
That's pretty good.
I guess yeah. Father's Day is where I'm like, all right, summertime.
I think I even hold back. I think it's July 4th and it's like, okay, officially summer now. All right.
Well, I think South Dakota has had recorded snowfall in every month of the year except for August. Because I definitely remember growing up and having a Christmas where I was out in a t-shirt and shorts, but my birthday is July 3rd and like having to put a coat on.
That's
on
crazy.
My birthday. Like it, the same year too. It's just, we're in a crazy area. For me, the biggest sign that it's summer is that first time you get a watermelon. It's really good, really sweet. Mm-hmm. Cut into it. It's really a good watermelon. Yeah. But the hard part is you never know what you're going to get with a watermelon. Do you guys have any like tips, techniques, how to get a good watermelon?
I don't really like watermelon, so no.
Oh, I love watermelon. So, by the way, very good carbohydrate, you know, and anyways, I have tried to apply what I've learned on reels. Hey, look at this kind of like how the vein or the green and all. I've not found it to be like an exact science. So no.
Yeah.
The answer is no. I don't know.
And that's kind of how it is with watermelons is you just like, you never know what you're going to get until you cut into it, but it's always like the inside that matters. It can be the like brightest, like or deepest green on the outside, and you can just get a bitter watermelon or like something that has no taste to it.
Yeah.
And that's where I got thinking about this is because of your sermon this week, that it's so much about what's on the inside that we don't always get to see that matters. And that's the most important part. And like, as people kind of, our rind kind of covers a lot of that and we don't always know what's going on with people, but obviously we're not going to cut people open, but it's you never know what's going on the inside.
Absolutely.
And there's obviously some pressure, you know, like people will thump a watermelon and think that they can get it. So you can kind of like put some pressure on a person. You might be able to see what's going on a little bit, but we never really know. And so I think that's why your message is so impactful, is because, not that we're just like watermelons, but kind of that it's really the inside that makes all the difference. And the things that we can't see, the integrity, the inner thoughts and the repeated actions that come from that, that really show who we are.
That's what, you know, accountability. I remember when I was a teenager, accountability began to be really pushed quite a bit. Like, hey, you need accountability in your life. But what doesn't get discussed as much is your accountability is only as good at what you're willing to engage, what you're willing to like be honest about. So you're like, yeah, I mean, the thing with integrity is you have the ability, and some people even have a better skill set, lack of better words, skill set. You can hide what's really going on, some better than even others, where that's why many of us have, you know, I think I mentioned it, where some of your heroes or people you just respect it, all of a sudden their life's imploded and you're like, what in the world? Like, I didn't see that one coming at all, to where it's just really difficult from afar. So I think sometimes you can see symptoms, but you may don't always treat a symptom like it is that. But no, it's hard. I think it's harder than we think it is to assess in someone else's life what's really, really, really going on. What cracks are there? What, like, yeah, it's, and in our own lives, it's very easy actually, though. And each one of us right now could like probably spend time. So here's a vulnerability of mine. I'm very aware of it right now, you know, but others, it's very difficult to assess.
Yeah. And I think something that really comes with that, with accountability, is being willing to accept when we see the evidence of a crack in somebody else. It's really easy for us to make an excuse for somebody and to just like turn a blind eye for something if we see something that could be a warning sign from somebody else. It's very easy. And especially for us, we can always make the excuse of, well, my intention was this. And so we always give ourselves the benefit of that doubt, but it's not always for the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was interesting is I was looking through, I always, when we get to this moment of talking about the message, like what didn't I say? What just didn't make it? And I put it in here, but it maybe go to when Jesus would like really forcefully engage religious people. He was going after this subject matter. When you think about like of all the things he could have talked to them about how he didn't like address the quality of their teaching, or he didn't address like a lot of stuff, but this issue, the integrity, or flip it, hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. That's probably one of the main things, if not the main thing, he addressed with religious people who should have known better, for lack of better words. In Matthew 23, this isn't in the message, but here's a blip of it. Just this is Jesus. What sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law and you Pharisees? Like Jesus, if Jesus is telling you have sorrow coming your way, you should be so stinking alarmed going, oh my goodness. So what sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law and you Pharisees, hypocrites, which was not a compliment, for you are so careful to clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you're filthy, full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first wash the inside of the cup and the dish, and then the outside will become clean too. Then he keeps going, what sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law and you Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled in on the inside with dead people's bones and all sorts of impurity. Outwardly, you look like righteous people, but inwardly, your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness. He even starts off, there's more there. He starts off critiquing, they were tithing like even the smallest amounts of things, like itty bitty. For the way we can think of it, like they were tithing like their birthday card money, but they weren't being merciful to people. They weren't being very loving to people, but they were making sure that every penny that they needed to return to God was returned to God. Right. But they were treating people like garbage.
Well, and with that, part of the tithing thing, that they would tithe everything, they had to make a show of it too. Huh. It was never a private thing. It was never, and that's one of the biggest things that Jesus keeps coming back to with them, is you do all of this in public. You put on this persona and you make a show of this. But in your inner lives, you're full of dead people's bones and decay.
Which to them would have hit a little bit even different, because that goes into like spiritual uncleanliness and needing to separate and all that kind of stuff. It would have been like, there was tears to what he said to them, where they're going, oh my goodness, you're saying that we're physically, spiritually unclean, all the stuff. He went after him. That's why that's what we really have going on internally. God is over and over throughout scripture going to show you that matters. That is a bigger deal than most of us give credit to, because we want the relationships and the fruit of life, and we want to enjoy life, but we are so quick to neglect internally what's going on. There's an old book now, written in the 90s. There's a very new book out written in the 90s. I want to correct myself.
It's okay. Those of us that were born in the 90s are feeling old already. It's fine.
So it's a really new one, just written in 92. What's Your Integrity Worth? Was kind of the goal of it. The Day America Told the Truth. So it's an interesting read because it's just full of research and surveys and trying to find out what people in America really believe. So the way the research goes, you're talking 35 to 40 years ago, a response. So think about just culture 35 years ago. The question was, most Americans are confused about their personal morals. So if you got $10 million, what would you be willing to do? So in your confusion of your morality, most of us are like, here's the kind of person I am right now. I mean, if you're watching or listening to this podcast, you might be assessing, even you're like, well, I'm this good of a person. I don't know what percentage you put yourself. I'm 80% or I'm 90 or whatever. But if you assess your morals, so here's what people revealed in secrecy in this survey. What are you honestly willing to do for 10 million? 25% of them would be willing to abandon their families.
Jeez.
For $10 million.
That's crazy.
It gets worse, just so you know. Mm-mm. 25%. 23%. Sorry for those of you, if you're younger years listening, 23% will become a prostitute for a week for $10 million. Mm. 16% would renounce their U.S. citizenship. Now, nowadays, people might be like, well, okay, I'd be more game for that. But
yeah, that one doesn't feel as.
Well, I would say what is important to bring up in the 90s was pretty patriotic decade.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Where a lot of our movies were like us versus Russia and us versus, you know, we were like being an American was like ultimate.
Yeah. Right after Top Gun.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So us versus some unnamed enemy that they never really.
So even like 16% willing to renounce their citizenship, that was a huge deal. Now here's what will mess with some of us. 7% were willing to kill a stranger for $10 million. 7%. Now, before we go like, well, 7% doesn't seem like a lot.
That's way too high to me. Should be zero.
I don't know what the current population of the United States of America was in the 90s. But let's just say it's really small and only like 100 people. That means 7 of those 100.
Just took out another 7.
That's what I'm like. Yeah. You begin to be like, oh my goodness, this is a mess. But it was an interesting read because it just tells you that those reveal what's really going on inside of you. Like when you say, what's your integrity worth? And everyone would say, well, not everyone. Most of us would be like, you know, I think it's good. I think it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay, cool. And when you put money behind certain things, you begin to realize, oh my, what would I be willing to do for 10 million, 100 million, like what, or a billion? Let's put a billion. What would you be willing to do for $1 billion? Yeah. And then we get into the world of justifying, and that's the dangerous territory. And Jesus was getting after them because they were. In essence, starting off right, trying to be religious kind of people, like God's number one. That's what they're trying to, like God's number one, but they were doing a messy job. And so I think that's why this sermon is important to bring up the topic of integrity and say, okay, if I want to be faithful, then I got to deal with what maybe people don't see. Because faithfulness, like I can be faithful to you guys and I can display something to you and actually for the rest of our lives, be something to you that may not be really going on inside of my own soul. But when I'm going to give an account to God, what I'm going to be giving an account to is a part of what's going on in my own soul.
I'm wondering that you said this at the beginning and I was kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Full. I'm saying I almost disagree because you said it's like, it's easy for us to see our own issues with our integrity. Well, if that was the case, why did the Pharisees struggle so much?
Mm-hmm. I think they were ignoring it. It's easy to see it.
I don't know if it's as easy as it. To see because we can have a culture that tells us that one's not as big as this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so they're convinced.
Yeah, if you're deceived. So.
I think there's a
plank and speck.
I think there's a being deceived in that to where God's going to keep working at your integrity, but you're going, well, I don't have that problem. And I think that still exists to this day to where it's like, well, the prostitute, I mean, that's pretty obvious their integrity's jacked up. You know, like, sure. And that's, I mean, we see it all the time. Even in the sermon I gave before, you have this Pharisee like, well, do you even know who's touching you? And so you can see this like, well, my life is a lot better than yours. And so I'm obviously doing a lot better things. So I don't, my issues pretty small in comparison to this. And so that's why I think we have this, we can treat integrity like, oh yeah, I have it. Where God's going, you've actually got, can I give you your laundry list of stuff?
Yeah.
You're just deceived thinking that you've done well. Maybe you've overcome. It's not the sin that's out there in culture, be like, how dare you have that?
Yeah.
Or how you fall apart. I mean, in our world, like you can look at, yeah, there's so many pastors right now who it's said to watch of like, they just can't end well.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, it's usually some kind of sexual sin or it's some kind of anger sin or some kind of things that are like kind of hot topic of that kind of stuff. But then there's also other ones that you're just like, David and I, you talked about it, like, they're not healthy either. Mm. And they're just, and but that's not a sin we talk about as much.
Right.
And but there's integrity in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to, I think God goes, hey, like what you like, it's in all areas of your life, just not the ones the culture tells you these are the most important.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. Yes, it will be easy to see if you allow God to tell you and not let the deception take
over.
Yeah,
if you're not deceived. Mm-hmm.
And so that was ultimately what, I mean, Jesus was trying to like, you are deceived thinking you are healthy in these areas when you're not.
So one of the deceptions is you might be aware of what's unhealthy in your life, but the deception could be you've got time to deal with it or that it's a minor issue, not a major issue. Yes. I think the devil does a brilliant job, not to give him credit, but on getting us to make what is actually major, we treat it as minor. Maybe because it's common or we think I've done it in my life, even in just basic maintenance around the house. Hey, I'm going to get to that. I know that's it. I'm going to get to that. And, we stay at the edge of the cliff, I think a little too long and then you have a bad day. So, or as Jesus brought up, rain, storm, wind, and oh no, it's I didn't budget for that. I didn't plan for that to happen right now. I wasn't ready for the storm. Then we blame the storm and all that. But like, no, you're like who you are. You brought up the recently in the last, I guess, 5 years, I should say, so many pastors that have impacted the nation from where they're at. We've seen
top spiritual leaders
completely collapse. And what is typically common with all of that is it was sin that hadn't been dealt with. Mm-hmm. I don't know those guys, so I don't know what like details, but I'm just saying it's one of those is like, it wasn't that all of a sudden they were doing life, like nailing life, doing awesome at life. And then this one random day, it was a collection of undealt with whitewashed tombs and then just got revealed in different ways. But.
So speaking of that, I think that transitions perfectly into my next question. What are the areas that you've grappled with the most in like relating to this sermon? Like what are the areas that have stood out to you as being difficult in your own life?
Oh man. It's been different seasons of just life. So I've talked a lot about like just physical health. Like it was easy for me to be fit, or it was easy for me to think I was being physically healthy all the way through like college, played sports, was active and also was 21 or younger. So you don't actually, it's interesting how you just don't typically, not ever, but you just don't see what you're doing as quickly as you do post 21. And now your body starts to react and respond differently. So for me, treating my body as though it's a vessel that I can actually disqualify myself from things God wants me to do by how I treat my body. Where it's not that God said, yeah, that's actually the time frame I wanted you to have. I wanted you to have that problem and that problem and that problem. No, I could actually extend and be more present and think more clearly and have more energy if I do something about my body. And so part of it, my lack of integrity, some of that hidden shame or that hidden, like, you know what, if we all had to confess our deepest, darkest secrets right now, you know, I would say a chunk of years ago would have been like, I'm not treating my body right. And I know it. Like that conviction from the Holy Spirit. And I know it. And I'm not doing anything about it kind of stuff. That's what comes to mind first. But
I would say probably going way back to all the way when first married and navigating even college a little bit, I think integrity for me, the biggest struggle was kind of finding that purity and walking in that. Mm-hmm. That was a huge lesson for me. And to be able to look back and be like, man, I'm so thankful I'm not the man I used to be in that area. Still, I mean, and this is the thing you learn, integrity is not that the temptation goes away. It's learning how to fight that integrity consistently or fight that temptation consistently so that you can have integrity. But I would say now, even I think one recently has been when it comes to, because I had like a personality, I just wanted everyone to be, it was kind of that pleasing people personality. Well, there's an integrity issue if you're not willing to walk through that to where you're not being completely honest or you're not being forthright or you're not sharing what your true opinion is. Mm. Where God is calling you to and you hide behind it because you're scared of what person may say or what they may think of you or those kind of things. And so learning how to have the boldness, I would say, and learning in some of those things. So those have been a few areas that I've had to be like, okay, and then I think more of it is, I think one we probably need to talk about more in ministry is how do you deal with success? Mm. Because things can go really well. I mean, David's story, and I'm talking like biblical David's story, mm-hmm. is him getting a little too cocky about the success he was having and thinking he could just do whatever he wants. Yep. And I see that becomes, this just is how it happens. This just works. And being humble enough to recognize like, wait, I'm not making this happen. So I would say those three areas have been areas that I've had to wrestle through, mm-hmm. had to work through, and God calling me out on some things in that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest areas that I've struggled with, and this is going to be kind of the opposite side of that boldness coin, is I have felt disqualified from certain things because I have fallen short in the past and because of things that I've done and because of issues I've had in my past or because I'm just not good enough, mm-hmm. right? It is. I think that comes down to an integrity issue of I'm not trusting God to work through me. And the thing that jumped into my head when I started to think through that is you talked a lot about, you based a lot of the beginning on the illustration of building your house on the rock, building your house on the sand.
Yeah.
Right? Where did Jesus build the church? What rock did Jesus build the church on? Yeah. Jesus built the church on the rock. The person he took and renamed Peter. And he said, you know, upon this rock, I will build my church. And it came from a conversation where Jesus came and asked the disciples, who do the people say I am? And some people said, you know, you're a prophet, you're these certain people. And then Simon Peter said, you are the Messiah. And Jesus responded, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, Petros, mm-hmm. right? Rock. And on this rock, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. Let's look at Peter a little bit here. Peter was a guy who he failed quite a few times publicly, right? He was angry. In the garden, he cut off a man's ear. Like, he attacked a man with a sword, probably not to just cut off his ear. He probably wanted to kill him, right? He was trying to kill somebody because he was angry. He was scared. He denied Jesus three times while Jesus was dying for his sins, or just after Jesus had died for his sins. He denied ever knowing the guy. He had spent the last 3-4 years of his life dedicated to this cause, and he just abandoned it because he was scared. Hmm. And yet Jesus chose Peter as the foundational person in his ministry, one of the most important people. If you look through the book of Acts, it's him and Paul, right? Are the two biggest foundations of that. Failure is not final.
Yeah.
It's never too late to let Jesus rebuild that foundation for you. And that's one thing that I've really struggled with in my life, is letting Jesus be that foundation for me and redeem those areas where I feel like I've disqualified myself, right? It's from a lack of faith is where that comes from. It's not because I'm such a humble person. It's because I don't have the right faith there.
Yeah, I think our human nature is if you screw up, that is a final fatal blow, right? You're done. And a lot of times we do face consequences to our decision making, but Peter is such a good example of this relationship that the Lord wants, and that he has done all the work to make this play out, but we still are invited into a response to that. And a lot of times we're going to withhold that response in a way because we feel that we don't deserve it, but we've not deserved it from day one, but because we then have like a history book for ourselves of ways that we've proven that we don't deserve it. Now we feel like we extra don't really deserve it. But that's the beauty of even a conversation on integrity. Someone could say, just the conversation makes me feel like I'm living, rewinding through all of my shame and regret, and like, oh my goodness, I don't think I've got a whole book full of integrity. Well, that's not really how integrity has to stay. Integrity can be like today. What about today? Having the outside and the inside being the same version instead of completely different versions. One of my favorite, fuels for my day, 2 Timothy chapter 2, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved. And so what I like about it, partially because of my personality, but the do your best.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, and the reason is I get, okay, so you didn't do your best yesterday. So how do I respond to that today? Mm. Well, do your best today. Do your best. And it's almost do your best has that limiter on it that we're like, I know when I tell my kids, hey, just do your best today. Like, it's not about who's around you. It's not about comparative analysis, even to your past life. Do your best. To God is one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word of truth. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, you didn't handle it right yesterday? Yeah, we all got our stories. But one of my favorite places to go when we go in Israel is to the beach where Jesus re-engaged Peter. They're all fishing. Mm-hmm. And Jesus basically stokes up a fire, starts prepping like, hey, we're going to have a meal together, which in Jewish tradition is restorative. Jesus isn't just preparing to feed their bellies. He's actually preparing to nourish their souls, mm-hmm. is the whole purpose of it. And so it's why I think the feeding of the 5,000 had less to do with people's bellies. I think that was a part of it, but it was like, you're about to see the power of God on display. The miracles, a side note, miracles are always meant to communicate who God is and draw us to an awe and surrender. And maybe even draw us to actually believing in the one true God. But in this case, Peter, you can read the story, like, is so excited to come see Jesus and, jumps out and and gets to the shore, and they have this restorative meal, which is beautiful because Peter doesn't deserve that meal at all. It's not, Peter has not been like, oh, Jesus, I'm so glad I've seen you again. So I've been preaching all over the countryside, telling everybody about how sorry I am. And I have lived perfectly since you were crucified. Like, no, he's not done anything to earn that meal. Yet Jesus is like, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Every time I go to that beach, I weep. I can't control myself. It's one, because it's so important that we know that no matter how whitewashed of a tomb that we've been, that Jesus will call that out, but he will call it out for the purpose of, so let's do your best now. Right. And for me, it's compelling because I'll have a bad day. I know you guys probably will too. I have a bad day. And the next day you wake up, you're like, and you're still stewing on the day before. Like, so what do I do? Do your best today. Mm-hmm. Same thing we would tell our kids. Do your best.
Yeah. Romans 5. I think of this when we talk about just character development and integrity. But it says, we can rejoice too when we run into problems and trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance. And endurance develops strength of character, and character strengthens our confident hope of salvation. So in that, you think about, all right, some of the question like, how do we build in character and build this integrity? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think, well, we got to make the right decisions. Well, that's not what it says. It says endurance. So some of it is just keep putting in the effort. Do your best. Because you look at Peter's story, even going back to him, and be like, there are other moments where Jesus does this teaching on communion. Half the people are like, dude, he sounds like a cannibal, like we're out. Because they had never heard that before. It was kind of unique in teaching. And so it was a tough day for Jesus because none of his disciples walking away. And then he looks at the 12, is like, are you going to leave too? And Peter goes, where else will we go? Like, that was kind of I see some endurance, like you're fighting through this. You have people you had brought along into this and now they're leaving. What are you going to do? And so I look at that, and then he has his moments where he falls, and here's Jesus going, hey man, what are you going to do about tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Let's take this on. And so endurance is that key component to getting to character development. Mm-hmm. I saw it recently. My son was pitching in baseball. First inning, phenomenal. Like, boom, strikes. I think he struck out three kids and walked one. I was like, great inning. Next inning, he walked a bunch, gave up four runs. I don't think they got a hit. He's in tears. He's falling apart out there. I had to go and be like, hey, buddy, you're going to pitch one more inning. What are you going to do next inning? Mm-hmm. Goes out there, throwing his hardest, and just boom, 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 strikes him out. Finishes the game. And I'm like, see? And this is what I'm trying to teach my kids big time, is like, failure's going to be part of life. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do the next part of it? Mm-hmm. And I think with integrity, sometimes we get so quickly, as soon as we fail, we think integrity's gone. But the beautiful part is it talks about endurance is that critical piece. It's getting back up. It's learning to fight for that integrity, because God's going, I've already forgiven you for that. That's why I went to the cross. So that failure, that sin doesn't have to define you. You now can walk in integrity. But it's not going to be easy. So that's what it's like, if we're going to go like, how do I walk this out? One, we talked about earlier, do you have any kind of, are you being deceived in any way? Because it will be really hard to know those areas. And then the second part is are you willing to get up the next day and face it? Because even going back to that deception one, I remember talking to some people and they're like, well, who am I really hurting? Huh. You know, it's like, some of it was they're looking at pornography or they're drinking. And there's like, I'm just drinking by myself, or I'm just doing this by myself. Who am I really hurting? Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, you know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just nobody. Mm-hmm. It's you. Yeah. It's your family. It's you're ruining intimacy. That's what you're doing.
And you both have coached. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that, and because this is my opinion, but would you agree that some of the best players on teams are not the ones who have the most talent, they're the ones that are just some, like they're the dogs that just like, no matter if the last play was perfect, they are back up and just they're ready to go. It's like they've erased what just happened and they're restarting. They have the ability to be like, I don't know what happened, but now I know what I'm going to do right now. Would you, I mean,
yeah.
In sports, they get called the dogs, like the ones who just keep grinding and they're not trying to get a perfect game. They're trying to win. Mm-hmm. It's the one who's like, I don't care if I landed that right or caught that perfectly or dropped that or missed that block. This next one, I am not missing. I'm going after it. The ones that just keep getting up.
Yeah. I read a book. I think you read it too, called The Captain's Class. A very interesting sports book that talked about how, when you think of these bigger teams that have done a dynasty teams, the captain of those teams is not who you think it is. Mm-hmm. It's not usually the superstar. It's the person who does all the dirty work, who gets all, like, it's this unique person that's like, I give you an example. There's a little bit ago, but San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan, he did not act like a superstar, did not want the glory, but he did all the things to make sure that his team would win. I think what we're seeing a little bit now, although Joker is a superstar, he is the weirdest. If you do NBA, he is the weirdest superstar. He's like, I'm done with basketball. I'm going to go check out my ponies. Like, that's just like who he is.
What do you mean I have to do a parade? I need to get home to my horses.
And so that's the unique component of it. And you think about who Jesus chose even as his disciples, King David being chosen. Like, God's looking at the heart and going, who will be the fighter? Like, and that's, all of us get the opportunity to do that, but who will fight even though it gets bad, even though they make mistakes, who will get up the next day and go, let's go?
Early when I was coaching, we played against a team that had they only played about six players and four of their starters were insane athletes. They were really, really good. They all had different skills. One was a great slasher. One was a great shooter. Like one was a big dude and one was just a really good all around like guard. Yet all four of those guys, we went, we can probably handle those guys. It's the one guy who's 5'11", you know, 5'11", 150, soaking wet, non-athletic, but he's the guy getting offensive rebounds. He's the guy who is pushing his teammates and he does all those intangible things. And we went, this is the kid that we really need to like, not worry about, but this is the kid that we need to be aware of.
Yeah.
And we got out there and he didn't have a great game. We got trounced by this team. They were very good, right? And they later in the season, though, they played a game where all four of those guys were healthy, but that one kid was injured and they got beat by 30.
Oh my.
Because that's they crazy. Just didn't have that intangible stuff. They all could do things individually, but he made them go as a team. And it's that kind of person that makes a difference that you wouldn't think of, like the person who is the leader that can make a team go.
That's why I put that story in the sermon about the Romans in their armor.
So good.
It's a classic do your best and then they decide that's too heavy.
Yep.
And I will admit, I don't know if this helps. I'll admit there's days I don't want to, I'm not in the mood to do my best. Mm-hmm. Like,
and you can do your best or do the hard thing.
Yeah. Like, it's like no, I'm just, I
don't want to do it.
I'm tired of doing the hard thing. I was just talking to a leader the other day who was kind of frustrated. And I said, it's hard being the adult in the room, isn't it? It gets annoying. It gets fatiguing to be like, all right, here's another day. I got to go be the adult. I got to go be the one who initiates or helps or supports or counsels or forgives. But it's if you want to be faithful, it's that I don't want to today, or maybe I do want to. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to do your best today? Yeah. And it's so important that no matter whatever life's been going like in your life, okay, that doesn't mean that it's unimportant or doesn't have consequences, but what's the practical step? Do your best today. Like, don't lie today. Do your best. No matter what consequences come from that, do your best to follow your budget today. Do your best to, if it's an addiction or a numbing mechanism, do your best today to not retreat to that. Go do something more productive and healthy and better today. Do today, and then you build on today, and today becomes tomorrow, and perhaps you can stack several things together. I just read, I think it was today, Jelly Roll, who I just follow, and so he's been on this health journey. He's dropped 200 pounds. But I guess, and I didn't know this because, I mean, it's not like we're best friends, but he hit, I think it was the holidays and then the birthday, and he completely like regressed, stopped working out, stopped exercising. Yeah, he made the magazine for like men's health and everything, did all the stuff. And then post that was just like, and he talks about it.
Hit the mountaintop.
He talked about it, how he was like, you know what? I've been working so hard for so long. And he just did an interview where he's like, I just need to tell all of you, I fell off the wagon. And it's like, isn't that life though?
Yeah.
Like where we grind, we do our best, and then something happens that disrupts that. Like Jesus talked about building on the rock versus the sand. A storm comes, the wind comes, and you're like, you know what? I need a break from that. And that's where integrity becomes something so crucial if you want to keep the relationships that you've got, or the job that you have, or the progress that you've been gaining. So just so important. Like it's not a small issue.
Go ahead. I had a couple of thoughts on this. Is like faith and hope are such a huge part of this conversation, and we got to realize like in heaven we won't need faith or hope because Jesus is right there. Like we're living in paradise. We don't need faith. We don't need, but in this conversation, how important it is that we get this testing ground to learn how valuable faith and hope is and how much we need it when we're in this fight. And I also think as you're battling to have integrity, I think one of the things you got to keep in mind is how much God is celebrating, even sometimes the littlest step you take. Think back to, you're about ready to have a little one here.
Yeah.
There'll be a day that pretty quickly crawling around and get up on the couch, and then they're looking at that thing going, come on, do it. And they just wobble, you know, they fall. Yeah. But we're over here like, oh my goodness, he's doing it. Like, she's doing it. This is awesome. And we celebrate like crazy for what we would consider, if that was a grown adult, we'd be like, dude, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? And I think we gotta see, like, God is looking at our integrity and going, you took a step today. Yeah. I'm so stinking proud of you. I'm celebrating that. Let's keep taking another step. Hey, you fell down. All right, let's get back up. Like, that's who God is. Because I think sometimes you have this, like, God's going, you fell down again.
Yeah.
Let me know when you can stand up. Like, we get that. Like, we think that's how God, and God's like, That's not how I respond. I heard that reason. I just thought like, that's so, like he is teaching us how valuable faith and hope is. Like, get back up. You've got this. We need that in this battle for our integrity. Being able to just see a God who's going, I saw what you did today. You did your best in this.
You shared the poem a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
It's about how finishing the race. It's not about how you finish compared to others. It's about how you finish according to you. One thing that you talked about, and I think is really important that people might not understand the value of, is margin.
Yeah.
Right. Is creating that margin for yourself to be able to connect and reflect and to have that built into your schedule in your life. And I think one person who models that really well is Jesus himself.
Mm-hmm.
We have many stories where, and Jesus went off by himself.
Yep.
And he was connected to the Father the whole time, right? That was something that was so important. He could have spent more time ministering to people. He could have, but he chose to take that margin and really, he probably didn't need it, but he modeled it for us and showed us how important that is. And I was gonna ask, how do you preserve the margins in your own life? You talked a little bit about having to get up earlier to be able to have some more time there.
Yeah.
But what other areas in your lives do you build in? Because you've been in ministry quite a long time as well.
Yep.
You've been in ministry for quite a long time, right? How do you find that time for margin? And what are your non-negotiables when it comes to the rhythms of your life and building those margins.
You want to go first?
Go ahead.
No, for me, I've used, I think, a term, irreducible minimums, where there's some people use goals, which are fine. I'm not actually super compelled by goals, because they make me go on a bit of a roller coaster. I'm more of a dashboard kind of a guy where I'm like, you know what? What do I refuse to go below? And I want that line to be high. But, and so, you know, for family, to make sure that our family is aware of what's going on in each other's lives, because I think that's a part of integrity, is knowing, we talked about, like, how do I make sure that people in my family aren't whitewashed tombs, right? Mm-hmm. So I got to know them. And so there's some irreducible minimums in my life that make sure that we're closely connected enough that I am perceptive to attitudes and tones and different language being used or frustrations and stuff like that. I'll joke about margin for me, like another way to talk about it, I think I may have mentioned on the podcast, is like marinade. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I think about the margin in my life, another way to say that is, what am I marinating in? Mm-hmm. And so every day there's different times and things that I'm doing to just marinate in, whether it's morning time where I'm writing in my prayer journal. What essentially I'm doing is I'm spending time with God, marinating in something that He's doing. It's music that I listen to at certain times based on pressures I'm feeling, walks that I go on, that it's marinating. It's not like, oh man, I got nothing to do, so I'm just going to go walk. Or I got nothing to do, so I'm going to work out. No. These are all like, I think I'm marinating in something different each time. But, and so for me physically, I've got to move. It's done wonders for my brain. And I mean, there's science behind it, but like, it's been huge for me to just not be a stagnant blob on a couch. I mean, like, I knew all that, but when I started applying it, that became a huge deal for me on what margin looks like. So I don't do a lot. I lift weights 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. It does wonders, and it's for like an hour, does wonders for my brain, my body, my soul, all the kinds of things. I go on a walk probably every single day if I can. Sometimes those walks are 25 minutes long. Sometimes probably the longest I walk is 1 hour and 5 minutes. So out of 24 hours, that's not a lot. I mean, there's some days that, talking about winter and summer, that it's not great. And I'm actually no joke, like just like in the house walking and pacing, or in the backyard doing like, but walking is important to me. Reading scripture is important to me. Those are off the top of my mind, but I think of it as marinating. What am I marinating in?
I like how you're saying it that way, because I think sometimes we can think margin as, I just need that time to, it's not binging on a show. It's not those kind of things. It's actually you creating margin in your life that actually helps push you or provide more opportunities for whatever's to come. To me, I look at like the reason I want to sit with God and do these things and marinate in it is because I don't know when He may want me to use that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, coming to this and being like, oh, okay. I was just listening to that book and I heard this, and like, I feel like I do that so I can share something that God goes, share that. That would be great. And you have that, but then also being able to spend time, like for me, like, yeah, my kids are involved in a lot of things. So I want to be coaching in it. So that way I get to see them in those things, and, but also get an opportunity to take myself out of just doing ministry and being able to just be dad and be coach for a little bit. We were talking about it the other day, just because sometimes, especially in ministry or any job that you do, you can get consumed by it.
Yeah.
And then you have no margin to do other things. And so then you wonder, why I'm like, why am I always tired? Why am I always this? Why am I that? Creating those things where you can think about it and your brain completely goes off whatever is the main thing, whether it's your job or whatever, that actually is so healthy for you. Yeah. To be able to go, I didn't think about that for the last 2 hours. Mm. That was awesome. Like, and you're in, I think science would show this, like that gives you your ability to then go back to something and be like, I feel like I have a fresh start to it. Mm-hmm. That's what vacation does. That's what, but you have to actually have things in your life that take your mind off of the main thing sometimes, or whatever is trying to consume you. So that's how you know your margin's working is the best way I describe it.
I would not to try to turn it up too much at one time, but I would say it's very important that a Christian listen to this, that from the beginning of creation, God instituted margin. He created for 6 days and then he rested. He did not rest because God was super tired, mm-hmm. right? So if you just look at the actual creation, the one who manufactured the watch, think of it that way, and the one who made us said, okay, so here's the rhythm to life. Work, 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 have this, that, be responsible, blah, blah, stop, rest. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, free all the slaves, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to give you 10 rules. And one of the commandments is going to be margin. Mm-hmm. That's what Sabbath is, margin.
Yep.
And I would say I've learned this just traveling all over the world. We apparently as Americans are extra horrible at this.
Yep.
Like, so if someone's listening going, you don't know, or but I got this and demand, I understand. We actually live in a country that does not doesn't teach and expect you to have margin. Mm-hmm. Margin in our culture is treated like a luxury, mm-hmm. where God would say, no, I actually have made it a commandment. Mm-hmm. And so that's why margin is so important. So that's why I've learned, because I've not always done this well at all, but I've learned that my soul, my integrity, my faithfulness is actually only as good as my margin has been.
Yeah.
It's literally linked like that.
I was going to say that if you weren't going to, it's like, yeah. Those are connected. Mm-hmm. So how your margin goes, so goes your integrity. Like, mm-hmm. I just, as weird as that may say to connect, but I would say that's how I've been able to do ministry for going on 18 years here,
yeah.
because I go, man, if I'm constantly consumed and never have a break to take my mind off of doing ministry, but that's true in any, like being a parent, being like all these roles and just be able to be with God, be Todd before I ever had all this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I think, and God's going, remember who you are. Remember just all of that, so you can take on this the next week. Mm-hmm. And so having those things is vital to being able to see integrity. Because I can almost prove it. If your margin gets low, then there will be an integrity issue coming.
Yeah. I would even argue that culturally, we don't just treat margin as a luxury. It's treated as a frivolity. Something that you don't even need, that's just
like a weakness.
It's a weakness. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You've got to be hustling. You've got to have, you know, 3 jobs. You've got to be doing something every hour.
Or you're taking care of yourself to look good, or fill your schedule with whatever value you have in that. Right. So being busy is the value.
Exactly.
And accomplishing things is the value.
Right. We value that so much. And then I wanted to jump in because this shows how same page we are on. My fourth question was, how much of the issue comes from people issuing the Sabbath? Like, literally, that is my fourth question. Like, it comes back down to it. It's a commandment for a reason. And it's not, Jesus talks about the Sabbath was made for people, not people made for the Sabbath, right? It was made for us to be able to have that margin. And that's why it was a commandment, is because Jesus knows. God knows who we are. Right? God created us, right?
Right.
He knows that that's something that we're going to be pushed culturally, mentally, physically. I don't remember if it got talked about on this podcast or not. If it has, then we don't need to go super in depth into it. But do you guys know much about the Citicorp building in New York?
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of this?
I did the illustration on it.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. I know I've heard it somewhere recently, and I didn't remember if it was, you know, obviously, I absorb a lot of what Fountain Springs does, and sometimes it doesn't get exactly categorized. But if you don't remember, it's a building that was designed in New York. And now I remember you talking about this, where it was put on pillars.
First nine levels are stilts almost.
Right. Yeah. And that's not uncommon, but almost always they're put on the corners of the buildings, right? When that happens. And because of an agreement with a church that was in the area, they actually shifted the pillars, the stilts, to the middles of the sides, right? Rather than the corners. And it's a cool design. It looks really cool. And part of it was artistic, architecturally, like, interesting. And they put it up, and they for sure knew it was going to be okay. Until an engineering student at Princeton did a study and basically said, these once in 45 years or so winds come along, and if it hits it at this 45 degree angle, it's going to knock the building over.
Yep.
And that's what happens to us when we don't have margin, is that once in a 45 year thing, it's always going to happen, right? You're always going to have that. Well, as long as this doesn't happen, we're going to be okay. It's always going to happen, right? Something is always coming, or something you didn't plan for is coming and is going to test that margin. And if you don't have that built in and you get hit by it, you're going down.
Yep. Yep, everyone will have their integrity tested. Everyone will.
Yeah,
the question,
Scripture says that.
Yeah, the question is how strong is your integrity going to be? Which then means, well, you don't just say, well, I want a strong integrity if it's going to be tested. No, it's the day-to-day choices. And if words like margin or marinade or disciplines, whatever words help you make your choices on this, is today matters. And so... do your best to present yourself. And so think about, what are you right now? If you had to present yourself to the Lord right now, what would you be presenting? If you don't like that answer, do your best today to present something better. Not to earn, this is not an earn salvation conversation, but this is like, what are you presenting? Because you will be tested. And it's worth maintaining and even having some of these rich relationships we all want. That if you want the best version of relationships, that means that your soul, the better condition your soul is in, the better relationships you can have, that full life that Jesus talked about.
Yeah.
And this may be, I think it's important to say, but I can understand most people may understand, for you to fight for integrity, it means you're going to actually have to put in boundaries in your life and make some pretty big decisions. And for boundaries to work, you're going to have conversations like, hey man, I'm not going to drink that, or I'm not going to do that, or I'm not, those kind of things. And most of us are so scared of how people are going to, what they're going to say or what they're going to think about us. And I can just tell you, most people will have a respect for you and they'll go, oh, okay, you're choosing not to drink. That's, you know, like, but why? And that's just the part you got to be ready to answer. And I've seen most people who have said, okay, I'm making an integrity decision. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to fight for my Sabbath. I'm going to fight to stop drinking. I'm going to fight to whatever it may be. And they tell this group that normally would have been pushing them against it, usually has like, all right, man, we get it.
Yeah.
Kudos to you. And that's Christian, non-Christian, whatever group you're in some of that. And that's the part I'd be like, don't let the fear of how people respond. And sometimes a boundary will disappoint people. That's how you know it's working. Mm. But I also say a lot of people will respect you trying to fight for integrity.
Yeah. All right. Any last thoughts, guys?
No. Wherever you're at, whatever you've been doing, God loves you and he is ready to help you do your best today.
So we're all in agreement that Saturdays, we just don't work anymore. That's 100%. Yep. Okay, sounds good. Cool. Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us this week. Just know that we are praying with you and for you. And I want you to be intentional this week about looking for those areas where you can create that margin to connect with God. We'll see you next week.